Maya Angelou said, "Hope and fear cannot occupy the same space. Invite one to stay."
Well, welcome to this Scraps podcast, everyone. My name is Chris Tripolino.
And I'm Melissa Locke.
And we get the pleasure of being with Bjorn Westgaard and Matt Mielke. Guys, welcome, and give us a quick what's what of who you are and how you're sort of intersecting with the COVID-19 crisis right now. Matt, would you go ahead and start?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a lot of things, dad, husband, et cetera. But, especially kind of in the COVID world, I'm a physician. I'm what's called a hospitalist. I take care of patients that are admitted to the hospital. And I see pediatric patients at Children's. Then I also see adult patients at Regions, where I bump into Bjorn every now and then. Once patients have been admitted from the ER, I'm kind of the front line within the hospital. Yeah. Take it away, Bjorn.
So I'm Bjorn Westgaard. I'm an emergency physician, primarily at Regents Hospital, but through a number of health partners hospitals and a little bit at Hennepin County, and also a researcher. And so in the COVID world, I'm one of the folks who puts on gear when folks first show up at the hospital and says hello, or if they're in real a lot of trouble, does a lot more. And then if they need to come into the hospital, I send them to Matt. And then in my spare time, I'm doing working on research tools to sort of track and ferret out some of the public health and epidemiologic spread of it.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah.
There's so many levels you could talk about challenges here. But what is a big challenge that you are facing right now? Let's start with you, Bjorn, that you're seeing. Let's start with on a systemic level. Like, what is the big challenge that you see right now?
I think coordinated response has, if you want to talk sort of systemically, has been something that has posed a challenge for a lot of places, less so in Minnesota, but I think federally we've seen it. And there are states where I know people who are working on the response where coordination working together has been a challenge, where people aren't used to doing it. They're not used to putting aside, whether it's business interests or other sort of standard operating procedure power dynamics that people aren't used to putting aside, and now they're having to do it. So I think that's probably been a challenge, and we've seen that, Matt can testify to this too. We've seen that with regard to all the things that we keep saying we need, tests, PPE, ventilators, hospital beds, critical care beds. Mm-hmm. When I go into work, there's two other challenges that I am seeing. I'm seeing one, fear, right? Because it's the unknown. We don't know what's coming. And none of us have seen this. This is hopefully once in 100-year kind of event. So nobody has seen this. Folks in China have seen it before, but we in the U.S. have not seen this, as we're all realizing since the early 1900s. And so, people have a lot of fear in the face of the unknown. And so how do you combat fear? How do you get through fear? Finding out what we know and sort of resting what you do in what we know, I think, is how a lot of people have dealt with that. That's how I approach it. And if you've seen the hashtag facts, not fear, that goes a long way towards communicating what you need to do. But then the challenge is, where do you get your information, right? How do you know what you know? Because there are a million and one news stories going around, and there's a million and one websites that you can hit up from the very reliable to the, dark web side of things. And so how do you know what you know? So when I go into work, I find one of the challenges is facing people's fears and being a trusted resource and pointing them two good sources of information. Sometimes even finding the original study, someone said, oh, it lasts in the air for 9 days. And actually pulling up the study and looking at the study with them so that they know, have a sense of why people are saying this, what do we actually know, and what does that mean for what we can do? So really trying to get to as much bedrock as possible so that you don't have to have this complete unknown, because facing that with fear is, I find, one of the least sort of productive ways to go about things, and really trying to get to the heart of what we know and basing your actions in that helps you to say, okay.
Yeah, and I think it's also, Bjorn's talking about, being around a lot of fear. And I think the fear, it's not just the patients we interact with. It's my neighbors know I'm a doctor and have a lot of questions about things. It's even other personnel in the hospital. The hospital isn't just doctors, doctors and nurses. It is a whole complex ecosystem. And even within the hospital and, the health systems, there is a lot of fear of the unknown. We're seeing pictures from Italy, pictures from New York City. And, there's fear, is that what's coming for us? As we get into hope, I don't think that's what's coming for us. But there's certainly more in store. I think we're doing what we can to try to be ready for that. But even for Bjorn and myself, there's still unknown because we don't know exactly what it's going to look like and how bad it will be here in Minnesota.
Yeah. I'd love to hear more about what is that like for you personally.
It's a bit of a mixed bag, to be totally honest. And, kind of the Maya Angelou quote you started with, I don't know if I totally agree with it. I think hope and fear do coexist within me. I think they occupy different spaces within me. They're not in the same space. On a very personal level, and my very rational medical brain says, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm almost certainly going to be exposed and probably get it and will almost certainly be fine. That's the rational side of me, and knowing that my family is all young and healthy too, and they'll be fine. But at the same time, I think about how much am I going to be at work and away from my family in the next few months? How many really tough situations? And Bjorn and I mean, part of what we signed up for going into medicine is, it kind of looks like we wade into and come alongside people in some of the hardest, worst times of their life, maybe even the end of their life. That's part of our job and part of what we do. And I think we find a certain amount of fulfillment in doing that when you can do it well and really come alongside somebody and just be a human with them in a really hard time. Mm-hmm. But it gets really hard when you're doing that multiple times a day and when you're doing it day after day after day, because none of us do that on a routine basis. And that's just going to be something that, if we're dealing with that day in, day out, like we're seeing elsewhere in the world, that'll be really, really hard on all of us. Cause we're healthcare workers, we're doctors, but we're people. And that gets hard.
Does that resonate for you too, Bjorn? In terms of you personally interacting with it?
Absolutely. No, I would second what Matt said. And I think the one sort of element of fear is that there are, as we've seen in most places of the world, a substantial percentage of healthcare workers have gotten infected and hospitalized with this. There are ER physicians across the country who are on ventilators with this. So there is some personal risk, and I don't want to bring it home or to anybody that I love. I can't wash myself in hand sanitizer 10 times a day.
That would feel nice though, wouldn't it, Bjorn?
Right. It'd be very moisturizing. So what do you do? And so I base that in sort of a reasonable way to proceed. And you look at what other countries have done and we can find out that information. What really resonates with me in what Matt said is that healthcare is really a team sport. And by team sport, I'm not talking doctors and nurses and the technicians who work with us. I'm also talking the folks in the lab, the folks who are doing cleaning and janitorial types or environmental services. There are a lot of people that make healthcare go, and they're not in the same situation as Matt and I are, where we have information that is presented to us daily about the medicine of this, but they're still in the cauldron with us.
Yeah.
We're not in it yet in Minnesota, but I know that there is fear that goes on in those circles. One of the things that I'm touched by is that people have fear, but they proceed with hope.
Yeah.
Right? And that is how we're all trying to move forward. And I think it's courageous of anybody who is trying to get along through all of this, whether you're in the hospital or out of it.
Yes.
And that's actually one of the great things that I see when I go into work. So, you know, I talked about having good sources of information. So a lot of what I have been doing on my shifts when I go in these days is touching base with everybody to sort of get a sense of how everybody in the department is feeling. And really, and when I say touching base, smiling, have a little chat about something else that's going on. What's new information you've seen? What's new questions you have? And if I don't have the answer, let's get to the answer so that you have those facts so you don't have to be afraid at work. And I think a lot of the folks that we work with are getting questions just like we are. And so to the extent that you can provide good, solid, factual information, that can also serve the entire community that is served by our institution.
Sure.
Yeah, and I will totally second that. I kind of my last week at the hospital was on a teaching service with resident doctors who, you know, they're doctors, but they're still very much in training. And we did the exact same thing that Bjorn was talking about, is like a check in at the start of the day because they have, you know, fear and anxiety as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of saying, as Bjorn said, you know, we're a whole team. In some essence, you know, we're the quarterbacks, if you will, but the team can function with just a quarterback. But, you know, we're still in a position where a lot of people look to us. I said, you know, we have to do what Bjorn is doing. We have to be able to provide the information and to help reassure other people. And I think that's something that, you know, whether you're in the healthcare field or not, if you can, you know, get good information, you know, we all have a network and community and getting good information to people, because there's a lot of misinformation.
One of the things that I one of the things we're blessed with in Minnesota is that we have a lot of publicly minded individuals who are already thinking about sort of the greater good, the common good, who have been thinking about all of this for a long time. So you look at Mike Osterholm, who runs the Center for Infectious Disease. I'm going to forget the full title, but runs that at the U. I mean, he's probably one of the, you know, one of a handful of the smartest people in the country about this kind of thing. You look at experts at our hospital or Hennepin County who have been involved in developing pandemic response plans, ventilator allocation plans, ethicists at Mayo who are working out triage plans for their institutions across the country to make sure that disparities by age, gender, or race are not reinscribed through this whole process.
Wow.
We have very smart people working on this in Minnesota. So that, you know, that's a local thing. And so one of the ways that I'm trying to contribute is thinking about research and how can we put together some tools that could be of use nationally. Or when I connect with colleagues and friends who are in government elsewhere in the country, what resources can I give them from Minnesota that help them?
Whew, that gives me a lot of pride and hope, actually, hearing about that.
Well, I say one thing we haven't mentioned, actually, is just the State Department of Health, which I think in Minnesota, I mean, we're blessed, I think, have one of the best State Departments of Health in the country. And, you know, they've done, you know, a lot of work. They're very involved with coordinating all the hospitals. You know, a while ago, Bjorn mentioned that, you know, even though all of these health systems are competitors in a business and academic sense, we're much better coordinated than a lot of places. And, you know, even in normal times, the hospitals at a large level coordinate a lot of things. And we have a lot of that infrastructure in place already. And the Department of Health here really helps to coordinate that. And they're also a fantastic source of information, actually, trusted information. So, I mean, they're like the Minnesota Department of Health website, if people want like a place to go, because they have good information and links to other trusted sources.
Okay.
Yeah, you can, I would say CDC, Minnesota Department of Health. If you go to the University of Minnesota website, there is a lot of information on COVID. If you actually want to look at the original studies, because there's dozens of studies coming out every day, there is a NIH has put together a website called LITCOVID, LITCOVID. And that basically is aggregating all the studies that are coming out every day. And you can search by any term and it'll pull up the COVID related studies. If you're scientifically minded, one of the things that gives me hope about this whole thing is we're all scientists now. We have spent a lot of time in this country sort of denigrating science or saying it's too complex, or I don't need to know about that, or they're making up facts or whatever. And this is what science is we pull together data and we say, okay, this is what it looks like. This is what we know. And the fact that everybody knows what an epidemiologist is now, right? That was not the,
it's everywhere now.
So, and everybody in the scientific community is full court press. I mean, I feel like if you get everybody on the page trying to figure things out and collaborating and putting information and processing someone else's information and putting together the next study, I mean, there are things that have been done in unprecedented time windows around this pandemic. So in terms of genomic sequencing, just general sort of developing a case profile or characteristics of the populations that are most affected, looking at the pathophysiology of what's actually going on in the lungs, you know, vaccine development, test development. I would say test development is one of the big things, the rapid development of reverse transcriptase PCR that's been going on around the world to make this happen. All of this happened in just an unprecedented fashion. Science gives me hope.
Yeah.
People are also getting to see science in action on a very large scale and seeing, you know, science is full of fits and starts and something looks promising and then it doesn't. And that's how science is. That's always how it has been. There's nothing different about how the science is happening now, but people are getting to see it. And that gives me hope that, you know, I mean, thinking about what things are going to be like after the pandemic is over, because it will be over at some point. Then, you know, I think that's one of the good things that will come about is, you know, people seeing science in action, renewed trust in science, hopefully renewed trust in experts.
Yeah. And renewed trust in even common action.
Well, and I think it's been beautiful to see the community that's being built as a result of this. I was actually talking to somebody at work the other day about, you know, being out with my kids for a walk, and, you know, normally
how many people are going for walks? Yeah. Like percentage of the population that's walking, it's just like skyrocketing.
But like having, you know, like, you know, somebody, you know, sees you coming and they, you know, step out into the street so you can pass. And normally how off put I would be by that and like how disturbed. And now I'm like, oh, thank you so much. Yeah. You know, like we're all in this together and, you know, seeing people, you know, doing things communally for the good of everybody. That's really heartening to see. 'Cause our society is, can be very individualistic, but that people have more of a focus on the community and the common good and thinking beyond just themselves. That's been really nice to see.
Yeah. All the connection, and, you know, we've got these social norms we're being asked to sort of institute that are totally sort of counterintuitive to how we are. And the fact that people are cueing each other that it's okay. Like, we look at each other, we lock eyes, and we're like, okay, 6 feet. Or, you know, I'm going to step off the curb for you. You're going to step off the curb for me. The fact that we're, that is a gift to each other, because it's not normal. Right. And that's a gift that people are giving to each other on a regular basis to say, it's okay.
Yeah. That feels like something, you know, as I am not a healthcare professional, but that is something we can all do.
The way I would frame it to make it real to people is you are literally saving lives by doing that. Like, it seems like a small thing, or might seem to say like, oh, we're both probably fine. Like, what's the harm? But no, you're saving lives by actually practicing social distancing and staying at home. That is, it's saving lives. And it's also buying people like Bjorn and myself time.
I think we should hear that again. Like, tell us what we should do. What do you want us to know?
Me?
Yeah. Tell people what they should do. Me the
hand washing, which is the foundation of civilization. I will tell you. It is. Hand washing has done.
Toilets and hand washing. Toilets and hand.
Toilets, okay. Sanitation. Absolutely. Use a toilet. Wash your hands. But hand washing has done more for human survival and flourishing than just about any other activity. And it's going to carry us through this again.
I can do that.
Like, that's very, very easy. Just get into the habit, get back into the habit. If you weren't in the habit, no, the social distancing elements. I think the one thing that I think about, though, that's weighing on me is trying to find mechanisms for helping those who don't have the luxury that all of us do through this. Because there are a lot of people. I have been very impressed by the shelter system, both in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Both of them have put a lot of things in place to help people get through this. Which has been huge. I work with a mental health organization, a community mental health organization as well. And they have a lot of people who are having a lot of, who are struggling, and they've put a lot of things in place to help them through. But there are people who live by themselves, who don't have social connections, who can't Zoom, who are high risk and probably feel pretty darn scared to go out and even get food. And so I think about those probably the most.
And I think if you know those people, to be proactive and reach out to them, whether it's finding a way to give them, you know, community. Community can be one other person. That is still community. Or if they need something, like, you know, even if just, you know, dropping off groceries or making a meal and leaving it on somebody's doorstep. That's another way that people can help, kind of reaching out to anybody that's marginalized, you know, that you know. And if you don't, there are more than enough opportunities donating to food shelves. I know they're being taxed quite a bit as well at the moment. Yeah, there's a lot of people in a lot of need right now.
As Matt said, donating to food shelves is a big thing that I think people can do. Another thing, actually, I'm going to put on my ER doc hat right now. We actually need people to donate blood. A lot of blood drives have been canceled across the country, and people are still doing things that get them into trauma situations, and we need the blood supply. So donating blood actually now more than just about any other time is actually a very concrete thing that you can do that will definitely save lives besides your 6 feet and hand washing.
And to actually do that, Red Cross's website and Memorial Blood Centers are the two places you can donate here. You can make online appointments on either of their websites. And there's many places throughout the city where you can do that. So yeah, please do.
There is a T.S. Eliot poem I want to read and get your take on, if that's okay. It's called Wait Without Hope. I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. For hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Wait without love, for love would be love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the love and the hope are all in the waiting. Wait without thought, for you are not ready for thought. So the darkness shall be the light and the stillness the dancing. Whisper of running streams and winter lightning, the wild thyme unseen and the wild strawberry, the laughter in the garden, echoed ecstasy, not lost, but requiring, pointing to the agony of death and birth. I mean, T.S. Eliot, what it makes me think of is that humility of science, of saying we don't know everything yet. And there's hope in that admittance, I guess, to me, that I hear you having too.
I would say, the other thing that strikes me, and I think we're all feeling this, we wish this wasn't happening, but it is.
Yeah.
I find just sitting with that understanding and having some acceptance of that, but yet still being able to go outside, see the beauty of the people and the places around, mm-hmm. knowing that this is what we have, and we do what we can with it, and we move through it.
Together, yeah.
Something just stood out to me the other day. I was just out in my, on the front steps of my house, and a flock of geese flew north. And they were, 100 feet overhead, so they're really close, and heard them coming, and just you know what? The world is still going. Nature is nature. Creation is beautiful. We are rightly all very focused on this, but there is such a bigger, beautiful world that is still going. Just this moment of watching those geese, just being geese and just being beautiful and being nature. I think I was getting ready to go into work, and, kind of just, there's anxiety coming with that, with having to head into the cauldron, if you will. And it's just this moment of beauty and peace, and it has stayed with me for more than a week. So.
Yeah.
So many things are coming into focus and being attentive to what you're seeing and really appreciating that. Again, I think what Matt was saying, but it also, I found that with each of the relationships that I'm in, or even, the food that I'm eating, we're all at home with less of our sphere to be giving us input. And so things I feel like are sort of circumscribed, but they're also, it's also a focusing of our attention. There is something about just accepting this is where we're at, and this is what I can do, and that's what I'll do.
Yeah, I think it comes into sharp relief given the occupations of YouTube, but I think that it's really powerful for all of us to hear. I mean, that's in our own ways, that's what we're trying to find our own ways of being who we are fully and walking into this unknown time. So yeah, thanks for that, and thanks for your work. I don't know how else to say, but on behalf of everyone else who is going to be hearing your voices in this, thank you for the work that you do. We're grateful and don't even know really how to be grateful, to show our gratitude and all of that. So thank you.
Yeah. Are there any last words of thank yous that you would, helpers that you see that you want to thank, Bjorn and Matt?
So I think we touched on earlier, but, and this is something, as Chris, you're just saying, how to say thank you is not just thinking of the doctors and nurses. There are so many essential people, both in the health system. It's, you know, respiratory therapists, the people that bring food to patients, the janitors. And it's not just in the health system. I thought about it yesterday when I heard the garbage truck outside. Like, they are so essential to what we do. And then we get our mail delivered still. Like, say thank you to everybody that is still, in spite of this crazy time, making our society continue to function. Say thank you to everybody. In general, we don't say thank you to people enough. Show gratitude to people. Just those few words mean a lot. I've had, you know, a handful of patients in the last few weeks just say, like, geez, I can't imagine what you're going through, but thank you for what you do. And it's so tiny, but it means a lot to us, you know, to know that people are thinking of us.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Bjorn and Matt and Fabric, for staying at the table right now.
We're all in it together.
We are. We're all in this together.
It's true. And we are connected with some amazing people. And we wanted to send you out hearing the voices of Fabric folks who are connected to this healthcare world. And so here's a batch of podcast postcards. Be safe. Be woven.
My name is Jen Metz. I'm a nurse working at Park Nicollet Urgent Care in St. Louis Park. With regard to Maya Angelou's words, I believe that though this has been a very difficult time for so many, it's beautiful and hopeful to see so many people coming together near and far, from people singing together on their balconies to honor healthcare workers in Italy, to right here in our own communities, where I have seen neighbors getting together in circles 6 feet apart doing morning stretches together, people dropping off groceries and supplies for the elderly or immunocompromised in their communities, or even my own friends, whom I haven't talked to in ages, getting together on Zoom from 4 different states away to play Pictionary and have a beer together. Being a single mom, I'm aware of the truth in the statement, it takes a village. It has been clearer than ever that we have built a village here at Fabric, and hopefully you felt or initiated something in your own neighborhoods to support each other and gain knowledge about what's going on, in order to feel a little more safe, inspired, and connected during this time of fear and isolation. Knowledge is power and fear is contagious. Working in healthcare, I can't stress enough how seriously this should be taken. It's important to follow the guidelines given to us by the experts, and though this may allow fear, sadness, and loneliness to creep into our hearts, remember to use your village and invite hope to win.
Hi, this is Julie Herzog, and I am leaving a podcast postcard. I am a nurse at Masonic Children's Hospital right now during this pandemic, and I've been away from the hospital a little bit because I'm on a stress off, but when I've been there, there's obviously been lots of changes, and there's lots of different things in the way that we're doing our work, but reflecting on the Maya Angelou quote, I was, hope and fear cannot occupy the same space, invite one to stay. Reflecting on that for me is, what I've noticed being at work is that I feel more anxious not being at work sometimes than when I am at work, because, we are trained and very skilled at taking care of sick people, and we do, that's what we do. So we are up for the task, and that's what gives me so much hope, because all the people that show up and all the skill that we have and everything that everyone's up for right now has been very inspiring. Despite the changes and the underlying anxiety, I feel like we're definitely up for the task, and being at work has made me feel that even stronger. So thank you for your concern for us, and we'll just keep doing what we do. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Hello, Fabric. My name is Craig Dohine, and I'm Crystallized Dad. I'm a rather distant member of the Fabric community. We live in Boston, and I more often attend by podcast than in person. I work as a pediatric surgeon in Boston at Boston Children's Hospital, but I've been well-armed by the Care IQ toolbox. These are unsettling times. The future is uncertain. We may be a few weeks ahead in Boston, but all of us in healthcare are preparing for the surge. I'm most mindful that we're all in this together as a community, and we each have different roles. For some, it's staying at home, working from home, caring for children, caring for each other. We will emerge on the other side of this. For right now, it's really to focus on the tasks at hand. Wash your hands, social distance, stay well. With love, Greg.
Yeah, hi. This is Angela Sirian Pearson. I'm a physician assistant in cardiothoracic surgery at the University of Minnesota. And I've been asked just to kind of share how my healthcare experience is going right now. So all emergency surgeries have actually, or I'm sorry, all routine surgeries have been canceled. And right now we're only doing emergent surgeries. We're really trying to get everybody discharged from the hospital that we can, in order not only to open up beds, but also to protect those most vulnerable from being in the hospital, and exposed, to other people. Right now there is a lot of fear and anxiety, felt, within my workplace. The mask shortage and the protective equipment shortage is very real. It's a very real thing. We are now universally masking, which we were not doing a week and a half ago, which was a big source of anxiety for me, knowing that most of the patients are already spreading the virus before they even get symptoms. So many of the masks are under lock and key right now. So you get one mask during the day to wear, and that's a regular mask. And then should you be involved with someone suspected of COVID, then you would get issued a separate N95 mask. Some departments have actually been furloughing their healthcare workers, and because of the low volume, and anyone who is furloughed is actually then, if they're asked to go to a different department or they're calling it redeployed to a different department, they're expected to go and help with that department, which would likely be the emergency room. So I think there is some fear and anxiety about that too as well. In terms of, whether or not hope and fear can occupy the same space, I feel that oftentimes it does. I think to say that it can't doesn't really ring true for me. There's a lot of fear, I think, out there right now, especially us healthcare providers. For myself and many others, it's, passing the virus on to your loved ones or those more vulnerable. There's a lot of concern surrounding that, not having the protective equipment that we need when we need it to treat patients. I think despite that fear and anxiety, I do have a lot of hope. I have faith that we'll all get through this. I have faith that this will make us stronger as a community. I do believe it won't be without, loss, extreme loss to some people, without pain and hurt. All I feel I could do is take one day at a time, and just got to do our best and pray. I mean, that's where definitely the hope and the faith comes in, is just praying every day that we can make it through this and prevent as much loss of life as possible. Thanks.
Hi, this is George Berg. I'm a nursing supervisor at mHealth Fairview Ridges in Burnsville, Minnesota. I'm helping to coordinate internal and external response to the COVID pandemic. First of all, 100 years ago, we exported the Spanish flu to the world. And it was a horrific event. But 100 years ago, scientists and health co-workers and the global community were able to use their intellect and skills to fight the pandemic and eventually control it. 100 years later, we have many more tools at our disposal. And while it's a similar crisis and very scary, I believe that we can use our science and technology and our global community to fight this effectively. For that, I am hopeful. And I strongly believe that we will use those things together to quash this. Thanks.
Hi, this is Robin Brown. I am a physician assistant. I work for Health Partners. And normally, I am seeing patients every day in the ear, nose, and throat clinic. Things have changed. Providers are being redeployed to different scopes with the whole COVID thing. Fortunately, because I have a little seniority in my job, I've been able to stay in our building. I work one day in the clinic, mostly doing video and phone visits. And the other 3 or 4 days a week, I am working the checkpoint. So all of our buildings now have checkpoints. And so I am the clinician at the checkpoint, and I am the one that determines whether or not you are able to enter our quote-unquote clean office building, our clinic building. So that's been a challenge. It's been very sad to turn away a lot of patients that have some terrible diseases, mostly lots of cancer and immunocompromised patients that are being turned away for their infusions or PET scans because they have a cough or they're short of breath. It's been a challenge. And obviously some patients are very upset. And I have a very different role. But I'm learning a lot. I'm getting to meet a lot of people that I normally wouldn't. I really don't go outside of my ENT clinic. And so I have been kind of forced into meeting the whole building. So that's been kind of neat. What is giving me hope? Yesterday was kind of a breakthrough for me. It was the first day that I've been home, that it was nice outside, and our family went on several, not one, not two, I think 3 family bike rides. And I also went on a long walk with the dogs, just me and the dogs. So yesterday was the first time I've felt close to my normal self, which was amazing. So I think spring, the changing temperatures, more sunlight, seeing that the world is, you know, the seasons are still coming, the days keep going, time keeps going. This too shall pass. So I think really it's the outdoors, it's nature, it's the sunshine, it's the river, it's the trails. That is where I find my hope and peace. Thanks. Bye, guys.